Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, February 8th, 2013, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kacharovich, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals Corp., your gold and silver bullion dealer. Our website is www.centralmetalscorp.com. Our phone number is 800-649-6722. We will be accepting email questions during the program, and you can direct those to mail@centralmetalscorp.com. Just to give our listeners a quick quote here on what's going on in the market, we have the gold is down $2.63. Silver is up about 10 cents at $31.50. Gold is 1668.36. We have the S&P 500 at 1516, up 7. Dow Jones is at 13,987, up 43. And crude oil is at 96.36, up 53 cents. Gold is down, but silver is up. I know it's kind of strange. Silver seems to be holding its own. Dow is below the big $14,000 mark still. So, that's the markets for you. Now let's move out to and welcome our co-host, Jeff Dunfield from Calgary. Jeff, how are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Bosco. I'm doing brilliantly well. It's a bright, sunny day out here. I understand you're in the throes of a snowstorm. Is that the case?
Yes, I woke up this morning. There's at least 6 inches of snow on the ground. I had to shovel my driveway before coming to work. But that's what you get when you live in Canada. So we're supposed to have snow all day, but I don't mind. It's...
Well, Bosco, I want to entertain everybody with a bit of a snow job, with a bit of an expose on a snow job myself, if I might. And I'm going to start it with an old tale that everybody has heard, but I suspect it may be a little illuminating to what we're about to chat about.
Okay.
Mark Carney was just approved to become the head of the Bank of England yesterday. Here's the Bank of Canada moving over to London to become the head of the Bank of England. And all the fuss and all the hoopla about him moving over there because he's going to take the reins of the monetary system and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So I'm going to start with a little tale about a young bull and an old bull sitting at the top of a knoll overlooking a herd of cows. And the young bull looks up at the old bull and says, "Come on, let's rush down there and get us a cow." And the old bull says, "Patience, son. Why don't we saunter on down and get all of them?" And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the lead-in to how the Federal Reserve Act, and a conspiracy by a group of bankers and politicians got together to create the Federal Reserve Bank, which is hilariously not federal, not government, privately owned, and a conspiracy to create a cartel. Now, while Bosco and I have chatted about the Fed on occasion, I would like to remind everybody, every now and again, once a year perhaps, Bosco, we sit down and tell everybody about the fiasco that is the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, we're going to start 103 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, in 1910, where a lad named Nelson Aldridge got together with six other individuals. Now, Nelson Aldridge was a senator at the time, and he was also the head of the Financial Monetary Committee that was looking at how to create a monetary system or a fiscal policy that would be conducive to helping the U.S. Now, at that time, we'll set the stage for the Americas. They were very suspicious of the banks because just previously, 2 or 3 or 4 years earlier, a bunch of banks had gone up the stump and people had gone to the bank to get their money, and there was no money. You can imagine, Bosco, that last summer in August, in NatWest, That bank had a computer glitch and nobody could have access to their money for 2 weeks. Ladies and gentlemen, 2 weeks without access to your bank card might fret a few people out, I would doubtlessly think. Okay, so Nelson Aldrich is here, and he invites six bankers to a meeting. And he says, gentlemen, bring your shotguns. Well, I don't hunt, Nelson. I've never even held a gun. Doesn't matter, just bring it. Make it look like you're going hunting. Or bring a fishing rod, doesn't matter, bring one of those too. And we will meet at the private rail car parked in the back of the train station. Back in those days, ladies and gentlemen, nobody traveled by air, obviously. They traveled by exquisite, luxurious rail car. And there were a group of servants on the rail car to service these individuals. There were six of them. I won't bore you with their names, but let us suggest that there were representatives of Rothschild. His name was Paul Warburg, J.P. Morgan people, the presidents of the largest banks and the like. These men, at the time, on the planet, represented 25% of the wealth of the entire Earth. It's not an insignificant amount of wealth. Now, what were they doing? They got onto the railway car, and in fact, the railway car was detached from the normal railway car just to make sure nobody was seen. They were told not to speak to each other of their last names. They were told to refer to each other by their first names only for fear that anybody would catch wind of them getting together. Oh, by the way, Bosco, they were all competitors with each other. Each of these banks and each of these bank representatives competed against each other in the world of the monetary realm. Okay, so they all get on the bank car. They all get on this lovely luxury car. The train doesn't necessarily pull out of the station. It backs up, connects to this rail car, and away they go 1,000 miles south to Georgia. And off the coast of Georgia, there is a little island called Jekyll Island. They were all assigned a little cabin, Bosco, 14 bathrooms in these cabins. They were palatial palaces, I suspect. What were they doing there? They were undertaking to figure out how best to serve their own interests in the coming years, because as it sort of unfolded, the calamity of the banking situation was... Cooperatives were getting together to put their savings in play so that they could lend them out to people who needed capital. This, ideally, ladies and gentlemen, is the manner in which capital might, should, can be lent out, because it is your savings. Now, the bankers got together and they said, you know, pretty soon all these cooperatives are going to be doing what we should be doing, and they will steal away our market share. So what can we do? Okay, now, historically in Europe, in the late 1600s, the Bank of England was formed, and many banks in Germany and in the Netherlands and in Austria and all over, where the bank controlled the money, and the banks lent to the government, and they created a fiscal system which was based effectively on inflationary pressures. Okay, so what they did is they'd print money out of thin air, da-da-da-da-da. Now, the Americans didn't like that thought, and there was a great pushback on what they coined as the money trust. They didn't trust the bankers, and consequently in the States, nobody would have been receptive to the method that they used in Europe, particularly the Bank of England, because the Bank of England was one of the most powerful banks in the world, certainly in the 1800s, because the bankers effectively controlled everything. So these bankers got together and they said, well, how are we going to do this? What can we do? And now they didn't care a whit about the people they were lending money to. They merely cared about their own financial interests. So they got together and they said, well, how can we deal with this? So the banker said, well, here's what we're going to do. Let us get together. They were in Jekyll Island for 9 days, Bosco, in 1910. They made sure that they never spoke anybody's names because for fear of anybody catching wind that all these competitors were getting together, because effectively they were forming a cartel. A cartel is, we'll carve up the market, we will ensure that we cannot fail, and should we have any failure, we will pass it along to the people. We certainly won't take it on ourselves. This is the antithesis of capitalism, isn't it, Bosco, and the antithesis of democracy. So now, why don't we create a situation where we form a little company and we will lend money to the U.S. Treasury, and then the U.S. Treasury will lend, or we will print money for the U.S. Treasury, and the U.S. Treasury will lend money to the big banks, and we will merely lend it to them at very low interest rates, and then they can lend it out to all the banks on the planet, all the banks in the U.S. at the time. And consequently, these cooperatives who are lending their money out at 8 or 10 or whatever percent, we can lend money cheaper than that because we've created this money out of thin air. And consequently, collecting interest on money you create out of thin air is a pretty good idea, isn't it? The bankers all went, this sounds like a great idea. Now, why would the politicians agree to this? Well, historically, classically, all throughout time, generally, politicians and governments spend more than they generate in whatever taxes and whatever revenues that they generate. So at the time, certainly at the time in the States, the Americans historically have spent far more than they've ever generated. There's a deficit right now, Bosco, of about $1 trillion, maybe even a little north of $1 trillion a year. What they generate in taxes, in income taxes, in state taxes, in federal taxes, they overspend by $1 trillion a year. And as Bosco and I have said historically, a grade 5 kid could figure out you make $2.5 trillion and you spend $3.5 trillion and you're in debt $16 or $17 trillion. There's something wrong with this math. Now, how can we convince the politicians? Okay, let us figure this out. Oh, the politicians spend more money than they make. Well, why don't we go back and figure out how much can you tax? Now, historically, Bosco, they did an analysis and they said, well, really, the people who we tax will get really upset with us if we tax them 45 or 50%. And history tells us that you can push taxes to about 40, between 40 and 45%. And that's when everybody will push back. And we don't want to give the people reason to throw the politicians out. So we'll try to keep the tax, all of the taxes, the cumulative taxes, if you will, less than 50, sort of 45%. But how else can we tax these individuals? Well, why don't we tax them with what is called the invisible tax, and this would be inflation. Now, let's put it into context because I will come back to this point. In 1910, ladies and gentlemen, in fact, in 1913, $1 buys what $100 buys now. Which means, Bosco, the old cow was right. Let's go back down and have it all. So effectively, 99% of the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar, we're making reference to U.S. dollars here, has been lost in the last 100 years. And here's how they did it. In plain view, in front of everybody, under the ruse of the financial vernacular, which makes everybody swoon in terms of the words, and everybody go, I don't understand what the dickens they're saying, but it sounds big and important and lovely. Okay, back to our story. We will print money. We will lend it to the government. The government doesn't ever need to worry about giving it back or paying it back. We'll just lend the money, more money, to pay back the money that they borrowed before. We will charge them a little interest rate. The government will pass on this money. The central bank will pass on this money to the other big banks, and the big banks can charge interest on money that we just made up out of thin air. So what's the return on that, Bosco? Get your calculator out. What is something for nothing? That comes down to an infinite return. We will let you lend money that we've printed, that we've created out of thin air, and we will let you charge interest on it.
Not a bad deal.
No kidding. Okay, so then, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the politicians say, we can get money from, we're going to borrow money. It's going to be printed out of thin air. And we now can spend our way into the Senate and into the Congress and into the presidency, whatever, da-da-da-da-da. Now, Nelson Aldrich at the time, he was also related by marriage to John D. Rockefeller. Now, John D. Rockefeller at the time, ladies and gentlemen, was arguably the Bill Gates or the Warren Buffett of the planet. He was one of the wealthiest men in the world. And his mantra, if you will, was, what was the phrase, Bosco? Oh, right. Competition is immoral and competition is evil. Hello. Let's manifest a little something called a cartel. Okay, so now we have the setting for the story of how the bankers and the politicians got into bed. The politicians win because they get to spend money to get themselves into power. They get to borrow it ad infinitum. They never have to pay it back because, really, they'll just borrow it down the road to pay back what they did today. And when they pay it back in 1 year or 10 years or 50 years, they're paying it back with inflated dollars, which translates to deflated debt. Paying back $1,000 today in today's dollars is far more expensive than paying back $1,000 in 20 years in then dollars because of inflation. The purchasing power of the then dollars is way less than it is now. So the politicians are happy because they get to spend money and get themselves into politics. They get to make promises of to the people to get them into power. Now, the interesting aspect of getting into power is the politicians are now here. The Federal Reserve Act was created, contemplated, and its genesis happened on Jekyll Island in 1910. And one of the main architects of the Federal Reserve Act was a guy named Paul Warburg, who, at that point in time, I'm sure everybody's seen Annie. He was referred to at that point of time, Bosco, as Daddy Warbucks in the movie Annie, which has since been out, right? And he was arguably one of the wealthiest men on the planet, and he was a representative of the Rothschilds. And his brother, what was his brother's name? Max, I think. Max was one of the wealthiest men in Europe. He ran Germany and the Netherlands and the like. So we now have the bankers and the politicians, and now it was a function of how do we get this stuff into law? How do we pass legislation, Bosco, so we can put into the U.S. a system that had been in Europe since the late 1600s in England that would allow the fractional banking reserve system to take all the money for the politicians and the bankers and create a ruse for the people. So here's another very interesting part of the intrigue. This week, I think this week, or rather posted in the last few weeks, there was an interesting review in 60 Minutes, and it talked about how a financial lobbyist got into the pockets of the senators and congressmen in Washington. And what he and this was all legal, Bosco. He effectively walks in the door and he says to somebody in Senate and somebody in the Congress, you know, Bob, when your term is over, maybe you can come and work for us. So all of a sudden, Bob's eyes light up because they don't pay senators and congressmen too much legally. So Bob's eyes would light up and he'd go, okay. And so now all of a sudden the financial lobbyists would show up and Bob would be batting for their team. He'd be saying, you know, I think you have a way to pass this bill if you do this, 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 and this. And the lobbyists would go, good for you, Bob. We hadn't thought of that. Now Bob is actually playing for the other team. And his declaration on 60 Minutes in front of Leslie Stahl was, once they heard that we might hire them at the end of the day, we owned them. So this is the part of the legal corruption. Okay, back to our story. So the bankers, Bosco, and the politicians, Bosco, got together and they said, how are we going to pass this into law? Because the U.S. people, they don't like this stuff. They don't trust bankers. And, man, you know, if we just put it forward to what we're thinking, it will get voted down and not go into law. So Max Warburg said, well, here's what we need to do. Let's go buy some senators. Now, the skeptic in me suggests buy, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just suggest that maybe it wasn't so much buy as it was. Let's enchant the senators or the congressmen in order to get this bill passed in a way where they think it would be in their best interests to pass this bill. So guess what they did next, Bosco? They went to the press. And what would you want the press? What would you want the press, Bosco, to say about this banking bill? If you were telling the press what to say about this banking bill and you were a banker or a politician, what would you want the press to say, Bosco?
Well, you want them to say what whatever positive to stray people in a different direction, I guess.
Okay, so you would think, ladies and gentlemen, you would think that they would have paid the press to write lovely things about this proposed Bank Act. But in fact, they did exactly the opposite. They did exactly the opposite because what they were doing is covertly planting the seed of counter manipulation. So let me make this quite clear, okay? This is very clever, Bosco. And these guys were very bright. And at the end of the day, we'll applaud their brilliance. We will find their acts egregious and horrific, but we will applaud their brilliance. So Paul Warburg and the gang interacted with the financial columnists. Now, back in those days, ladies and gentlemen, newspapers were the internet. Newspapers were read widely by anybody who needed to be in the know, and newspapers were days, weeks, even months historic. So it was always looking back on things, as opposed to the internet now, where you can see these things happening in real time. Paul Warburg approached various journalists, Bosco, and said, "How much do you get paid?" And they said, "Well, I get paid 100 units of money to write an article." And he went, "Okay. Well, would you accept 250 units of money to write an article?" And the journalist went, "Well, yeah. Here's what I want you to say. I want you to say that this proposed banking act is really bad for the bankers and very upsetting for them because it ties their hands and it protects the people, and the bankers will be really upset." And the journalist went, "Oh, well, you're paying for it, so here you go." So they wrote all this stuff. Now all of a sudden in the financial papers it said they're proposing to put a bank act in, Bosco, that will upset the bankers no end. It will give them no power, no control, nothing. And consequently, the bankers will be up in arms about this new legislation. And what did the people who were reading all these newspapers think about that act, Bosco?
Right.
Of course, they thought, if you're going to pass an act that ties the bankers' hands and doesn't let them do what they want to do, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it gets passed in Congress, we'll be safe. Counter-espionage, maybe not, but counter-intuitive relative to what we would think they would want. And then Paul Warburg went back to the bankers and said, "And here's what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to put more teeth in this. We're going to make this legislation seem even more onerous for us bankers, just to make sure it gets passed." And the bankers went, "Paul, what do you think? That's crazy. Don't do that, because that ties our hands even more." And he goes, guys, relax. Hold on to your knickers. We're doing this just to make sure it gets passed. As soon as it gets into law, we will change it." Okay, you clever lad. He wasn't the richest man in the world, or one of the richest men in the world, Bosco, for nothing. So sure enough, in 1913, after much consternation, I mean, it took them some time to get it into legislation, it went before the House, it went up to the Hill, and it was passed into law, and this was called the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. Now, let me chat a little about what it effectively gave the bankers and the politicians the capacity to do.
All right, Jeff, hold that thought for 1 second. We're at the halfway point, so if you could just finish up. We have some other questions to address, and just wanted to let people know about our website is centralmetalscorp.com. Our phone number is 800-649-6722, and we are running a special right now for 1 ounce gold bars. They're $24 over the spot price. Any amount, any quantity, and if you want, you can give us a call and book those prices today. Okay, Jeff, go ahead.
Okay, Bosco, my apologies, ladies and gentlemen. Bosco is very gracious today in allowing me to rant and rave about this topic that I think needs full and open disclosure to everybody around, because at the end of this, if you aren't outraged, I've done you a disservice by not explaining the story well enough. Okay, so now we have the Federal Reserve, and if I might reiterate, in 1913, 100 years ago, $1 buys what $100 buys today. And what they created is a system of inflation where they print money in order to facilitate the borrowing by the government to get themselves into power and the lending of the central bank or the Federal Reserve to lend money to all the other banks in the U.S. banking system. And this is called inflation. And in 100 years, It has reduced the purchasing power of your dollar by 99%. Okay, so let's put this in terms. You still have dollars in your pocket. Let's put it in terms of what that really means. Imagine if you bought a stock then at $100 and it's now worth $1 and you have to sell it. That would be a tough pill to swallow. Okay, so now let's also put it into normal terms of disclosure as well. The banks get money for free and they lend it out for something. That would be called usury. Those would be called excessive interest rates. Any interest on money that is given you for free is usury merely because the return on that money is infinite, okay? It has generated our most unfair tax and reduced the purchasing power of our dollars by 99% in 100 years. They also, in about 1930, Bosco, if I remember correctly, they confiscated all the gold in the U.S. at $20 and shortly thereafter reinstituted it at $35. That definitely is, one, inflationary, and two, not in the public interest, okay? This is a cartel. The Federal Reserve Act and the bankers and the politicians formed a cartel which clearly operated against the public interest. Okay, now we have, what's the phrase, Bosco? We talk about capitalism, and we talk about the too big to fail trigger, and we talk about the banks going to the Fed saying, oh, somebody's going to fail in their business. We can't allow that to happen because you will lose votes. Please print more money. Lend it to us. Let us lend them more money to get them out of debt. Okay, that's the lunacy of it, ladies and gentlemen. You're heavily in debt, Bosco. Let me lend you more money so you can pay off your debt so then you are more indebted. But that's how we're going to fix things. That's how the world is working right now, ladies and gentlemen. People are lending money to get people out of debt. Recently, in a gathering in Davos in Switzerland, they all got together and said, we are starting to fret about the U.S. debt, go figure, and all of a sudden the euro started to rise relative to the U.S. dollar. The more money you print, the less value your dollars and your euros have. So in the course of all this, Bosco, what has remained stable has remained sound and, in fact, has dramatically increased in value over the last 100 years.
Well, there you have gold and silver, folks. Jeff just explained to you how the system was established and how the statistics are viewed. And when you understand that money is created from nothing, and when you look at charts and graphs that are based in U.S. dollars, it paints a completely different picture. And this leads us into the question we have here regarding, we have from one of our listeners, a lot of the negative information coming out regarding the gold market, a lot of articles claiming that the bull market in gold is over, that the 2011 high was the high point, and we're going to go down from here. One particular article that came out this week claims 12 charts that will make gold bulls furious, and was from an analyst from Credit Suisse. And these charts don't really make me furious. They kind of make me laugh. And if you understand Jeff's story regarding where money comes from, I just want to go through some of these charts and explain to people how you have to take a different perspective. You have to look at these charts with a be skeptical and understand what the value of money is. The first chart here in Exhibit 1, he's showing a chart of interest rates and comparing the low interest rate level today and claiming that interest rates are going to rise. Well, as Jeff explained, if interest rates start rising now, it's going to kill the housing market, okay, and it's going to kill the stock market. And obviously they don't want to do that because the Federal Reserve just officially announced recently that they're going to continue bailing out the mortgage industry by printing $40 billion a month, and they're going to continue bailing out Treasury market by another $45 billion a month. Okay, so obviously they're going to have to raise interest rates eventually, but over the short term, obviously they're not going to do that. And the chart shows a peak in interest rates in about 1980, and it starts coming down from there up until now. Well, it's completely contradictory because gold was going up during the 70s while interest rates were rising, okay, and it fell down. So if interest rates are going to rise, according to this chart, then gold should be going up in price. Well, that's not what he's claiming. He's claiming that the bull run is over and gold is going to go down. So that shoots out that chart as useless. The next chart here, they have a long-term gold price from 1841. And what people need to understand that when you look at a chart for gold, gold was fixed for many, many years up until 1971. Okay, when Richard Nixon took the closed the gold window, the U.S. dollar was no longer backed by gold, so it had no stable frame of reference, no base value. Okay, it was the value. If you look at any U.S. dollar right now, the value is just based on what the Federal Reserve, what Jeff just explained. Okay, what the Federal Reserve says its value is. Well, that's only that dollar only has value based on the good faith and credit of the Federal Reserve. And when you know that the Federal Reserve can print money out of thin air, just as Jeff explained, it's a perfect story leading into these charts. Okay, the U.S. dollar is created out of thin air. It has no value. The intrinsic value of paper money is zero. When you look at
fiat money, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they call it fiat money. And when your dollar is backed by gold, it has some intrinsic value because gold inherently has intrinsic value. Even if you look in a dictionary for intrinsic value, it's something that has value in and of itself, okay, without any counterparty. Whether your gold bar is stamped as a Canadian maple leaf or a U.S. eagle or a Swiss franc or whatever, okay, it doesn't matter what's stamped on your gold bar. If you have 1 ounce of gold, okay, it's 1 ounce of gold in Canada, in Switzerland, in China, in Africa. It doesn't matter. It's still 1 ounce of gold. And it's the metal content that has the value. You can always convert that metal into a commercial use. You can trade it to somebody. You can melt it down and make jewelry. You can use it in electronics. And the same thing applies for silver. I put a nice little video about silver on my website this week, explaining all the uses of silver. Silver is used in electronics. It's used in the medical industry. It's used as money. It's used in silverware, and so on. So, and with silver, the story is you have to consider silver is the only precious metal, even base metal, okay, till now that hasn't broken its 1980 high. Okay, in 1980, silver high was about $50 an ounce. Right now, it's trading at around 31 something. Okay, every other precious metal has broken its 1980 high. So obviously the bull market in precious metals is not over because silver is still way below its previous high. Okay, so that's one other thing that you have to consider. And looking at some of these other charts here, one of the charts he's comparing gold to the housing market, okay, which... for one, I don't see the comparison because gold is a metal and money. A house is really a consumable, and it's created. And obviously, the housing market is being supported by the government's fiat money. Okay, Ben Bernanke clearly stated that they're going to bail out the housing market $40 billion a month. So inflated prices in housing doesn't mean that your house has more value, folks. And everyone knows about the big mortgage crisis. You can buy a house on mortgage, on debt. All it's doing is increasing the debt of the balance sheet of you and your family, increasing the debt of the banks. And when you look at the prices, his chart here is Exhibit 13 on this article that I have a link on my website to, by the way. It says that the U.S. house is measured in gold, okay, and it's at a low, okay. The last time it was at a low was in 1980. But you have to, again, okay, the interest, these charts, it just amazes me, Jeff, at how some of these analysts put out this information, and it's publicized in media all over. And when you look at these charts, they absolutely make no sense. Like this housing chart he's comparing to the houses measured in gold in 1980 as compared to now. Well, look at the big difference in 1980. What were interest rates for mortgages back then? Phenomenal compared to now. Okay, so the low in gold, what makes you think that the value of houses measured in gold can't flatline now? Okay, it can go flat for who knows how long. But the fundamental argument is doesn't make sense because interest rates are at all-time lows right now. And gold is still below its high. But in 1980, gold was at a high and interest rates were at, what, 16, 17% back then? We're at interest rates for mortgages now, I don't know, 3% or so. The internal bank rate is less than 1% or zero. The argument is completely makes no sense. Okay, so whoever believes that we're at a high point in this precious metals market and the bull run is over, I think is living in an illusion, because you're not looking at the facts and looking at.
Well, Doctor, let's back into the math of let's put it into practical terms. Ladies and gentlemen, you earn, let's pretend you earn $250,000 a year. You spend $350,000 a year. Your debt is $1,700,000. And what you potentially owe down the road is $12 million. Do you think a bank would look at you and say you're solvent? Well, I suspect not. Now let's look at the U.S. numbers. The U.S. generates $2.5 trillion in money every year, give or take. It spends $3.5 trillion. It's $1 trillion light every year. It announces or declares that its debt is between 16 and 17 trillion, and it has unfunded liabilities of $120 trillion. Somebody in grade 5 can figure out this math. The way they are paying for it is by printing money. Now, that's very smart for the government because they can print money, the monopoly money that we chat about, and they can pay off their debt in a currency that's backed by the creditworthiness of the United States government, which is exactly what they're doing in Europe. It's exactly what they're doing in Japan now. They've just announced a massive monetary support of their economy, and it's what they're doing in the States. The reason the denarius fell, the reason that the currency during and just before the French Revolution fell, was because it was devalued by its printing. In many of the military conflicts over the last several hundred years, Bosco, when the military guys came in and they said, how are we going to do something? They said, go find their currency, bring it in, and we'll flood the market with the currency. If you dilute the value of the money, you are printing monopoly money. It has happened historically over and over and over again, and the decline of the Roman Empire happened when they started to dilute the denarius. This isn't something that has happened only once that we're worried about. This is historic, that has happened time and time again. Now, that being said, as we did some weeks ago, Bosco, when we had the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury on the show, he just said, as long as everybody buys in, as long as everybody's drinking the Kool-Aid, they will keep doing this as long as they possibly can. However, as we saw in the press earlier in the last couple of weeks, countries are now starting to express interest in repatriating their gold stores. They're starting to say, maybe we might want to have our gold stores repatriated. France and Germany are saying, well, we supposedly have this in the Federal Reserve Bank. Bosco, might you send it home? And the Federal Reserve Bank saying, okay, we'll get back to you. We'll get back to you in a bit. There are serious things. I mean, this is something to question. This is food for thought, ladies and gentlemen. And we do think there is a reason that in 1971, had your grandfather given you $10,000 worth of cash versus $10,000 worth of gold, there is a reason had you taken gold in 1971 when they took the current the U.S. currency off the gold standard, it would be worth $400,000 or $500,000 today. Had you taken the $10,000 in cash and invested it at, I don't know, 3%, Bosco, it would be worth $40,000 or $50,000. Hello? Give me the gold every time, Bosco. I think in the collapse of all the monetary systems historically, we are in a situation where I suspect gold will be very valuable and the fiat currency becomes less and less so because of the very mechanism of inflation over time.
Yeah, there's definitely a move. I think internationally there's, it's not I think, but I know that there's a move. International central bankers are moving towards holding their gold. There's already been discussions by the IMF to have gold as a tier one asset. We discussed that before as well. I don't know if they actually went through with it or not, but it's obvious that many countries around the world want the physical gold in their own possession. And it's, if that should send a strong signal to many investors that should follow suit. Take possession of your physical gold, get it outside the financial system. Don't hold paper gold or certificates or ETFs or anything like that. We offer independent vault storage here at Central Metals where you could actually see exactly what you own at the vault, and it goes into the vault. Each package is serial. There's a serial number on it. Again, we always recommend that personal possession is the safest and most popular way to own gold, and we recommend that to all of our clients. Some of the news that I just wanted to cover, Jeff, we have a little bit more time today, so I just want to cover a couple other things here. There is an article that came out today of a gold ATM machine in South Florida that you can actually go to an ATM machine and buy gold bullion. So I think that's another positive for gold. We have an article that also came out this week that Chinese gold imports double on a year ago as China becomes the world's largest consumer of gold. So the Chinese are still continuing to buy gold. And regarding the story you just mentioned regarding the Roman Empire and their money, as you know, here in Canada now, we've done away with the penny. And I was, doing a transaction yesterday at the store, buying a coffee or whatever. And what do they do at the cashier? Jeff, when your bill comes out to $1.97, they round it up to 2. If your bill comes out to $1.93, they round it up to $1.95. So, folks, doing away with the penny is another inflation tactic that everything has gone up. Obviously, they're going to round up, not round down, all of your transactions. So that's another issue that obviously inflation is alive and well. It's just being hidden. And don't look at government numbers. Obviously, you know that they're manipulated, and they change the way that the numbers are calculated all the time. Just as for example, the federal debt, according to a GAAP-based accounting, okay, which is what most businesses, practically all businesses use generally accepted accounting principles to measure their debt and their assets and so on. The federal deficit of the United States hit a record of $6.6 trillion at the year ended September 30th, 2012. Okay, that level was fully 42% of the nation's annual GDP. Okay, that's not a sound balance sheet, folks. The U.S. is continuing to print money. And I just wanted to compare, since we discussed charts, and I wanted to just give people an idea of, gold's performance over the past 10 years. I went to Yahoo Finance, Jeff, and printed up a chart. And a lot of people you know, pay attention to what Warren Buffett discusses. He, okay, there's no doubt he's the world's greatest investor and so on. But just something that people need to look at. Okay, if you look at Warren Buffett's stock, you go to Yahoo Finance or any other chart provider, Berkshire Hathaway over the past 10 years, okay, the return on that stock is roughly about 185, 190%, okay? Not too bad. You know what the return on the HUI, which is the Unhedged Gold Miners Index, since the year 2000, the past 13 years, the return on that index is 500%, okay? The return on a gold bullion fund, a gold and silver bullion fund, is roughly 450%. The return on the Dow Jones Industrial Average is just over 0%, maybe 2% or so. I can't tell from this chart. It doesn't give specific numbers, and I can't get actual gold bullion, but I think gold bullion is over 450%. So Warren Buffett continues to criticize gold, yet gold bullion has outperformed his fund by multiples. Okay, why is this? How is this possible? Okay, the most successful investor in the world hasn't even outperformed gold, which does nothing. Gold doesn't do anything; it just sits there. Why is this? I think it's because when you try to fight the Fed, you're going to lose. And a lot of people, you know, don't understand that. But in my view, when you're fighting the Fed and the Fed says that they're going to print, Bernanke's been printing since he came into office. Central banks are printing. When you have the power to print money, you're going to print it. Politicians, Jeff's story at the beginning of the program is a perfect example. When you give the politicians and the bankers to print money, what do you think they're going to do? So in essence, when you're fighting the Fed, trying to outsmart the Fed by investing in the stock market and so on, you're going to lose. Just buy gold and silver and let it sit there. You do nothing and you're going to outperform the best investment minds in the world. Just let your gold sit there and let the Fed do all the work for you, because they're going to do it. And history proves that all central banks have printed money. We're going into hyperinflation. In my mind, there's no doubt about that. And all you have to do, folks, is just put your money in a reserve, something that's outlasted every bank, every currency, every government in the history of the world. Get your funds into gold and silver and don't do anything. Don't trade it. Just let it sit there and you'll come out on top.
Okay, Bosco, I think we're pushed over the time here, buddy.
Yeah, we're pushed over a little bit, but I extended the time a little bit today. So you can, if you have any comments, Jeff, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I suspect, ladies and gentlemen, that we have ranted and raved enough. I would also suspect that we've given you enough food for thought to go and do some research. I would also I want to fall back into the 60 Minutes program that was recently put on TV to talk about how the financial lobbyists can go in and change legislation in order to fulfill their objectives. And it was quite shocking relative to what this financial lobbyist who was doing a whistleblowing campaign did. And it was this. They can go in and change the legislation in order to facilitate their own agenda. And they do it in such a manner where they get very clever lawyers to change things in such an obscure way that nobody can interpret them or understand what the changes mean, but for the chairs of these various committees. Because apparently, as this whistleblower said, and go look it up on the web, ladies and gentlemen, this guy's name is Abramoff, and it was on 60 Minutes. And it had to do with the changes are so obscure that nobody understands them but the chairman of the committees. And the chairman of the committees are the guys that are going to get the jobs by the financial lobby groups when they leave the hill, if you will. And so consequently, it is shocking and egregious to think that the financial industries are the ones that are, in fact, drafting the legislation of the banks. The banks themselves are drafting the legislation of the banking acts. It is mind-boggling. Anyway, food for thought, ladies and gentlemen. Please do go check those things out. And Bosco, thank you. Yep. Thank you for allowing me to rant.
No, Jeff, no problem, Jeff. We appreciate it, and hopefully our listeners learned something a little bit about history. It was well said. And, you know, just wanted to remind everyone, we are currently running a special on 1 ounce Swiss gold bars, $24 over the spot price. We have quite a bit of inventory, and I don't know how long we're going to be offering this, maybe just a couple of weeks. But if you're interested, you can call us now at 800-649-6722. You can book your order. We have free shipping across the United States and Canada, depending on the amount. But silver, usually we have to charge for silver because it's so heavy. There we have some people calling already. So anyways, folks, please give us a call or send us an email, and we hope to see you again next week. Have a good weekend. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Austin. We'll see you next time. Cheers.
All right. Central Metals.